I have another special guest on the radio, a newcomer to KTWH, Chris Dunham, who is a resilience forestry manager for the Nature Conservancy, our local chapter here in the Duluth area, is with me on the line. Thank you so much, Chris, for being here this morning.
Well, thank you, Katya. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, it's really fun to have you. And now we've had a three-part series of interviewees from the Nature Conservancy, and both of them said, oh, you got to talk to Chris. Got to talk to Chris. He's the tree planter extraordinaire. So I'm really excited to have you here. And I think we should start by just telling us a little bit about your role with the Nature Conservancy and how long you've been there, and what brought you to it in the first place. All of those things are interesting.
Sure. Well, like you mentioned, my title is Resilience Forestry Manager. So I manage the operations side of the Nature Conservancy's work in Northeast Minnesota. We have three foresters here out of the Duluth office and a conservation coordinator, and we're all just really focused on making the forest more resilient. You know, the forests provide people in nature with a variety of services, not just the things that we enjoy like scenery, but also some really critical services like clean water and fresh air. And resilient forests can experience a stress like an insect outbreak or some of the impacts we're seeing from climate change. And if they're resilient, they have the capacity to bounce back from that stress and still
right.
function as a forest and provide all those services that people in nature depend on.
Seems like it's almost like us as humans, you know, it's a little bit about what we're exposed to, but it's also about how well we respond to that stuff. And so to boost our own immunity,
yeah.
it's almost like an immune system, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think of that a lot about, you know, it's if you know that you're going to be faced with some sort of chronic health issue in your future, you would want to get your body in the best shape possible to deal with that
right.
stress and be able to make it through. And the same thing with forests. You know, we really want forests to be thriving and healthy and kind of the best that they can be, because we've got so many unknown stresses coming at them.
Yeah. Do you see, Chris, I mean, it does seem like the awareness of the importance of our forests has risen dramatically over the last couple decades with the knowledge of climate change and carbon and sequestration. Do you see this continuing to grow? Like, in some ways, you could look at northern Minnesota and say, wow, this is like one of the richest areas in the world, if you just look at our forests, or the potential, mm-hmm. maybe. It just kind of depends what happens next and what our forests continue to look like.
Yeah, the potential definitely, and you don't have to look far to notice problems in the forest. You know, you're
right.
just driving up the North Shore on Highway 61, you see a lot of the dead and dying birch and brush and grass, and that's not normal. That's poor health for that forest. We know that the forests along the North Shore are capable of growing maybe 8 or 9 species of trees, and some of those, like white pine, can be 4 feet in diameter and live for 400 years, or cedar trees that can live 800 years, and all the associated habitats, the structure in the canopy when you've got a 100-foot-plus white pine and all those layers that are missing out there, and that structure, that's habitat. Those are niches for different species. So we've got a forest that's stressed, especially when you look at that potential of those forests compared to seeing 1 or 2 species, and they don't look very good right now.
Right, right. Well, let's just talk about, right, it seems like we're moving into talking about pests and general threat to forest health. You know, we have definitely noticed when we go into the woods near Two Harbors, the balsams look, in certain areas, almost look like they've already died, and they're spindly and short, and we know mm-hmm. there's a spruce budworm out there. We know there's been a drought. Just talk to us a little bit more about forest health in our particular area.
Yeah, spruce budworm is one that people are noticing quite a bit. It takes a few years. At first, you might just notice something different in the top of the tree where it looks maybe a little silvery gray because some of those last year's needles or this year's needles are being chewed on. And then it progresses, and we get to about year 4 of the outbreak, and that's when you start seeing the trees that are totally dead or full of red needles. And that's a native pest. You know, we experience these spruce budworm outbreaks about every 40 or so years in our area. It's concerning when we think of some of the projects that the Nature Conservancy is working on. We've been focused on the watersheds of the North Shore the past few years doing some riparian forest restoration, and look at those forests, and the conifers are really important along the streams for shade and the way they regulate runoff and snowmelt and help provide clean water. And if most of those conifers are balsam fir and now they're starting to be killed by spruce budworm, that's a problem. And I mentioned the North Shore forest with the dead and dying birch trees. So we're just really focused on restoring some of that diversity. You know, diversity is the superpower of the forest. It's what will allow that forest to be resilient and respond to future threats. So we want to just be aware of what the potential of that forest is, and if there's supposed to be 9 species in there too, and you know, the age of those trees and those forests can be hundreds of years, and we're not seeing any big old trees out there, then we know we have an issue that we're trying to resolve. And fortunately, we do have the expertise. We sort of know what to do, and we've done it in places where we're restoring these important tree species. So it's just getting out there and doing the work.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're bringing back species, but aren't you also introducing some that may be more amenable to our climate, a warmer northeast Minnesota? Do you want to highlight any of those in particular?
Yeah, sure, exactly. Yeah, you know, it used to be we could kind of look at the past as the blueprint for going forward, but now we kind of have to still use that. You know, some of those species that have been really part of the forest for a long time are still going to be important in the forest function and its ability to provide services. But we have to look ahead and we start to think about what species are going to thrive with what we know about the future climate. So we know it's going to be warmer. We know it's going to be drier. Sometimes it seems wetter because we might get all of our rainfall in a brief period of time. So the trees need to get that moisture in a time when they can really use it.
Right.
So species like white pine, fortunately, are really a beautiful species and a real hallmark of our northern Minnesota forest, is predicted to do well with the future climate scenario. So we're still emphasizing white pine as we have been. So we're fortunate to have white pine, but some other species like red oak or bur oak that we see here and there in our northeast Minnesota forest, but the future climate will really, seems like it'll be good for those oak trees too. So we're trying to bring in more oak trees. Yellow birch is one that's what we're trying to focus on a little more. Nothing too crazy yet. You know, we're not bringing up species from down south or anything, but we are thinking about seed zones of where the seed for these trees comes from. And we've got some projects underway that have looked at the performance of different seed zones. And again, not going too far south, but you just move maybe 100 miles south and a white pine from that seed stock may do better than a white pine that came from northern Minnesota. You know, they're programmed to start to grow earlier in the spring. So if we get, you know, a longer growing season, or they might shut down a little later in the fall and take advantage of that. So, but we have to be careful too, because it's still northern Minnesota. We can still get cold, we can still have, you know, we can still have a frost in late May, and so we're moving towards that direction of some of that assisted migration, but and keeping track of it too. That's what's really important, is everything we do, we know exactly what species have gone where and where they came from in terms of their seed zone and genetics, and so we're continuing to track that so that we can improve and learn a lot as we go.
Yeah. Now let's just talk a little more specifically about these. I mean, you're not planting the trees yourself necessarily. I think you're doing a lot of partnering. How exactly does your tree planting program work?
Most of our work is with the public agencies. We're trying to really work on the forest across the larger landscape. So that's partnering with the Forest Service and the DNR and counties. And we've got a really great collaboration and partnership with all of the agencies here. We sit down with them on a really regular basis. We usually have one kind of a bigger planning meeting where we look at what we're able to do in terms of funding that we were able to receive and support from, whether it's grants or individuals or corporations. And then we look at opportunities out on the landscape in places that we care about. Mm-hmm. We've got some mapping that shows, you know, parts of the landscape that are a little more diverse topographically or potentially cooler, and so where we can get the most bang for our dollars. And so then we sort of develop a program, and planting the trees is one thing. We do a lot of that. You know, we hire forestry companies that bring crews in, and this year we're going to plant 1.2 million trees in Northeast Minnesota.
Woo.
Out of our office. So it's a pretty grown to be a pretty big operation.
That is a big operation. That's a lot of trees. That's really great. I mean, that's a lot of investment, really. Time and people involved and hours.
Yeah,
and
a lot of coordination. And you can tell sort of the collaboration is super important, you know, with just working with our partners like Lake County Forestry or the DNR office in Two Harbors or all the ranger districts with the Forest Service. You know, we're sharing tree cooler space and we're coordinating on who's doing what. And it's really pretty fantastic. I think it's something that we're just really proud of, the way that we've kind of come together as this land management community and taking care of the forest on a really broad scale. We've planted over 5.5 million trees, probably just in the last maybe 10 years where we've gotten pretty serious about it.
And is it starting to make a real difference in the landscape? I mean, I know trees take time to grow. And
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily something you're going to see the benefits right away.
Yeah. Well, and there's the tending part of it, too, which is also expensive and requires a lot of coordination. You know, the deer love to eat white pine and some of the other species that we plant. So we have a pretty massive bud capping operation in the fall where we're out with the little white pieces of paper that you see stapled to the tips of the trees that'll deter the deer. So we do about 7,000 acres of that every year. And then we have to go back and cut the brush and the aspen and other less desirable tree species that go around the tree that we plant. So we do several thousand acres of that every year too. So we're out there with the tending, but it's really been great. We've got about 30,000 acres that the Nature Conservancy has been able to keep an eye on. We sort of call it our adopted sites. Like if the Forest Service comes to us and says, hey, you know, we'd like help with some white pine on this particular site, we say, yeah, we'll do it. And then we also say, we'll do that tending work, because it takes about 10 years of that, you know, protecting them from deer, releasing them from the competing shrubs. So we do that on about, we have 30,000 acres now that we're keeping track of. And even projects like our Highway 61 reforested, we call it, start to see those fences along the highway. We've done a bunch of work around Split Rock State Park and between Tofty and Grand Marais. Well, some of that earlier work, I started in 2002, so I'm coming up on 20 years now. And some of those earlier plantings, you can drive up the highway and look out and actually see the tree kind of poking up through the brush. And so that's a good feeling.
Yeah.
Some of those trees have cones on them now, and you can say, okay, this is working. So it's reassuring to know that we don't have to be just helpless victims of climate change or some other issues in the forest. There are things we can do to restore forest and become more resilient to future stresses and make sure they're still providing us with those things that we enjoy, like being able to just be out in the serenity of a forest and the benefits that has to our emotional health, but also the real critical things like clean water and clean air.
Yeah, it seems to be the theme this morning, because earlier this morning I interviewed Jade L. Kevlin, who is a local beekeeper, and she talked a lot about the migration of bees that's really being managed by humans but it seems like forests and bees are two things that most everyone knows that we need to keep alive here and hopefully bring back into a state of sort of sustainable health and restoration. And Chris, I have one more question just about, you've mentioned a lot of government agencies. Do you also work with logging companies or the logging industry, and how does that go?
Yes. We don't do a lot directly, but we certainly recognize the importance of each other, I guess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, most of our forests in Northeast Minnesota, we call them disturbance-dependent forests. So they used to be managed by fire or wind, or you'd have these large disturbance events, you know, fuel would build up, you know, the spruce budworm outbreak is a good reminder, you know, that that fuel would build up. We had the big greenwood fire last summer that burned 30,000 acres, and that would have been just commonplace. And that's how some of these species really regenerate, is through that disturbance. Well, we don't have those big fires. Once in a while we get one, of course, but most of the fires we need to put out for obvious reasons of people and property in the way. But so that disturbance now, it's the forest products industry is providing that. You know, they're the ones out there disturbing the forest and allowing light to come down to the soil and the regeneration of some of these really iconic tree species. You know, I've been on some Nature Conservancy field tours in other parts of the country, and you go to a place like the Front Range of Colorado, and the density is building up because they haven't been able to manage their forests, and they can't allow those fires to burn either, and then that fuel builds up, and then you get a big fire, and they don't have markets for their forest products, so they're literally paying people thousands of dollars to cut and remove trees. And so it's a balance, of course. You know, we wouldn't want our forest to be managed all for aspen on a 50-year rotation, but some of the just market forces and things that sort of take care of that, so we don't have that situation. So we're really thankful that we do have still have a forest economy and forest industry here to help us manage our forests, and it's kind of a back and forth, but I hope they see the benefits of what we do too, and we definitely have a relationship that we keep up. And I was on the board of the Master Logger program. We tried to have a Master Logger program in Minnesota. I was on the certifying board for that, and Minnesota, or the Nature Conservancy, has a seat on the Minnesota Forest Resources Council alongside with industry, and so we're plugged in and working in a lot of different ways together where we can.
That's great, Chris. It's really encouraging to hear. I mean, it sounds like you don't necessarily always see exactly eye to eye, but you definitely recognize the presence of the other, and there are certainly many mutual interests involved that can be acknowledged on both sides. And, you know, it seems like nobody's, you know, everyone wants the forest to be resilient, I'm sure. So that is the common ground.
Yeah, we've got some common denominators we can all agree on and get behind.
I'm speaking with Chris Dunham. He is the Resilience Forestry Manager for our local part of the Nature Conservancy. Thank you so much, Chris. Is there anything I forgot to ask you that you want to make sure to mention?
You know, I just would reiterate the fact that we're just not helpless victims of climate change and the things that we can do. And I would encourage people to just visit our website at nature.org or go check out the state parks and learn about forests and be inspired and have a great spring.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you so much for coming on the air here and sharing that with listeners, Chris. We'll talk to you again sometime.
Great. Well, thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. That was Chris Dunham. He is the Resilience Forestry Manager for the Nature Conservancy, wrapping up our series of three interviews with local Nature Conservancy experts. What a fun series that was.